They're really good. What are they going to do to her? They're going to make her give evidence against her brother. Some kind of a made-up story. Will they hurt her? That depends on how fast she caves.
She's not going to cave, Yanni said. Not in a million years. Don't you see that? She's totally dedicated to clearing her brother's name.
Then they're going to hurt her. Where is she? Franklin asked Reacher. Best guess. Wherever they are, Reacher said. But I don't know where that is.
She was in the upstairs living room, taped to a chair. The Zek was staring at her. He was fascinated by women. Once he had gone 27 years without seeing one. The penal battalion he had joined in 1943 had had a few, but they were a small minority, and they died fast. And then, after the great patriotic war had been won, his nightmare progress through the gulag had begun. In 1949, he had seen a woman peasant near the White Sea Canal. She was a stooped and bulky old crone 200 yards away in a beet field. Then nothing. Until in 1976, he saw a nurse riding a troika sled through the frozen wastes of Siberia. He was a quarryman then. He had come up out of the hole with 100 other Zeks and was walking home in a long, ragged column down a long, straight road. The nurse's sled was approaching on another road that ran at right angles. The land was flat and featureless and covered with snow. The Zeks could see forever. They stood and watched the nurse drive a whole mile. Then they turned their heads as one as she passed through the crossroads and watched her through another mile. The guards denied them food that night as punishment for the unauthorized halt. 4 men died, but the Zek didn't.
"Are you comfortable?" he asked.
Rosemary Barr said nothing. The one called Chenko had returned her shoe. He had crouched in front of her and fitted it to her foot like a store clerk. Then he had backed away and sat down next to the one called Vladimir on the sofa. The one called Sokolov had stayed downstairs in a room full of surveillance equipment. The one called Linsky was pacing the room, white with pain. He had something wrong with his back.
"When the Zek speaks, you should answer," the one called Vladimir said.
Rosemary looked away. She was afraid of Vladimir, more so than the others. Vladimir was huge, and he gave off an air of depravity, like a smell.
"Does she understand her position?" Linsky asked.
The Zek smiled at him, and Linsky smiled back. It was a private joke between them. Any claim to rights or humane treatment in the camps was always met with a question. "Do you understand your position?" The question was always followed by a statement. "You don't have a position. You are nothing to the motherland." The first time Linsky had heard the question, he had been about to reply, but the Zek had hauled him away. By that point, the Zek had 18 years under his belt, and the intervention was uncharacteristic. But clearly he had felt something for the raw youngster. He had taken the kid under his wing. They had been together ever since, through a long succession of locations neither of them could name. Many books had been written about the Gulag, and documents had been discovered and maps had been made. But the irony was that those who had participated had no idea where they had been. Nobody had told them. A camp was a camp, with wire, huts, endless forest, endless tundra, endless work. What difference did a name make? Linsky had been a soldier and a thief. In the west of Europe, or in America, he would have served time. 2 years here, 3 years there. But during the Soviet Union, stealing was an ideological transgression. It showed an uneducated and antisocial preference for private property. Such a preference was answered with a swift and permanent removal from civilized society. In Linsky's case, the removal had lasted from 1963 until civilized society had collapsed and Gorbachev had emptied the gulag.
She understands her position, the Czech said. And next comes acceptance.
Franklin called Helen Roden. 10 minutes later, she was back in his office. She was still mad at Reacher, that was clear, but she was too worried about Rosemary Barr to make a big deal out of it. Franklin stayed at his desk, one eye on his computer screen. Helen and Ann Yanni sat together at a table. Reacher stared out the window. The sky was darkening.
We should call someone, Helen said.
Like who? Reacher asked.
My father. He's the good guy.
Reacher turned around.
Suppose he is. What do we tell him? That we've got a missing person? He'll just call the cops, because what else can he do? And if Emerson's the bad guy, the cops will sit on it. Even if Emerson's the good guy, the cops will sit on it just the same. Missing adults don't get anyone very excited. Too many of them.
But she's integral to our case.
Their case is about her brother, so the cops will figure it's only natural she ran away. Her brother is a notorious criminal, and she couldn't stand the shame.
But you saw her get kidnapped. You could tell them.
I saw a shoe. That's all I can tell anybody. And I've got no credibility here. I've been playing silly games for 2 days.
So what do we do?
Reacher turned back to the window.
We take care of it ourselves, he said.
How?
All we need is a location. We work through the woman who was shot. We get names. We get some kind of a context. We get a place. Then we go there.
When?
Yanni asked.
12 hours, Reacher said. Before dawn. They'll be working on some kind of a timetable. They want to take care of me first, and then they want to start in on Rosemary Barr. We need to get to her before they run out of patience.
But that means you'll be showing up exactly when they're expecting you.
Reacher said nothing.
It's like walking into a trap, Yanni said.
Reacher didn't answer that. Yanni turned to Franklin and said,
Tell us more about the woman who was shot.
There's nothing more to tell, Franklin said. I've been through everything, forward and backward. She was very ordinary.
Family?
All of them are back east where she came from.
Friends?
Two, basically. A co-worker and a neighbor. Neither of them is interesting. Neither of them is a Russian, for instance.
Yanni turned back to Reacher.
So maybe you're wrong. Maybe the third shot wasn't the money shot.
It must have been, Reacher said. Or why would he pause after it? He was double-checking he had a hit.
He paused after the sixth, too, for good.
He wouldn't wait that long. It could have gone completely out of control by then. People could have been jumping all over each other.
But they weren't.
He couldn't have predicted that. I agree, Franklin said. A thing like that, you don't do it with your first or your last shot.
Then his eyes lost focus. He stared at the wall like he wasn't seeing it.
Wait,
he said. He glanced at his screen.
Something I forgot, he said.
What?
Reacher asked.
What you said about Rosemary Barr. Missing persons.
He turned back to his mouse and his keyboard and started clicking and typing. Then he hit his enter key and sat forward intently like proximity would speed the process.
Last chance, he said.
Reacher knew from television commercials that computers operated at all kinds of gigahertz, which he assumed was pretty fast. But even so, Franklin's screen stayed blank for a long, long time. There was a little graphic in the corner. It was rotating slowly. It implied a thorough and patient search through an infinite amount of data. It spun for minutes. Then it stopped. There was an electrostatic crackle from the monitor, and the screen wiped down and redrew into a densely printed document. Plain computer font. Reacher couldn't read it from where he was. The office went quiet. Franklin looked up.
"Okay," he said. "There you go, at last. Finally, something that isn't ordinary. Finally, we catch a break."
"What?"
Yanni said.
"Olene Archer reported her husband missing 2 months ago."
Chapter 15 Franklin pushed his chair back to make space, and the others all crowded around the screen together. Reacher and Helen Roden ended up shoulder to shoulder. No more animosity, just the thrill of pursuit. Most of the document was taken up with coded headers and source information. Letters, numbers, times, origins. The substantive message was short. 2 months previously, Mrs. Olene Ann Archer had made a missing persons report concerning her husband. His name was Edward Stratton Archer. He had left the marital home for work early on a routine Monday and had not returned by end of business on Wednesday, which was when the report was made.
"Is he still missing?" Helen asked.
"Yes," Franklin said. He pointed to a letter A buried in the code at the top of the screen. "It's still active." "So let's go talk to Olene's friends," Reacher said. "We need some background here."
"Now?"
Franklin said. "We've only got 12 hours, Reacher said. "No time to waste."
Franklin wrote down names and addresses for Olene Archer's co-worker and neighbor. He handed the paper to Ann Yanni because she was paying his bill. "I'll stay here," he said. "I'll see if the husband shows up in the databases. This could be a coincidence. Maybe he's got a wife in every state. Wouldn't be the first time."
"I don't believe in coincidences," Reacher said. "So don't waste your time. Find a phone number for me instead. A guy called Cash, former Marine. He owns the range where James Barr went to shoot. Down in Kentucky. Call him for me."
"Message?"
"Give him my name. Tell him to get his ass in his Humvee. Tell him to drive up here tonight. Tell him there's a whole new invitational going on."
"Invitational?"
"He'll understand. Tell him to bring his M24 with a night scope and whatever else he's got lying around."
Reacher followed Ann Yanni and Helen Roden down the stairs. They got into Helen's Saturn, the women in the front and Reacher in the back. Reacher figured they would all have preferred the Mustang, but it only had 2 seats.
"Where first?" Helen asked.
"Which is closer?" Reacher asked back.
"The co-worker."
"Okay, her first."
Traffic was slow. Roads were torn up and construction traffic was lumbering in and out of work zones. Reacher glanced between his watch and the windows. Daylight was fading. Evening was coming. Time ticking away. The co-worker lived in a plain heartland suburb east of town. It was filled with a grid of straight residential streets. The streets were lined on both sides by modest ranch houses. The houses had small lots, flags on poles, hoops over the garage doors, satellite dishes on brick chimneys. Some of the sidewalk trees had faded yellow ribbons tied around them. Reacher guessed they symbolized solidarity with troops serving overseas. Which conflict, he wasn't sure. What the point was, he had no idea. He had served overseas for most of 13 years and had never met anyone who cared what was tied to trees back home. As long as someone sent paychecks and food and water and bullets, and wives stayed faithful, most guys were happy enough.
The sun was going down behind them, and Helen was driving slowly with her head ducked forward so she could see the house numbers early. She spotted the one she wanted and pulled into a driveway and parked behind a small sedan. It was new. Reacher recognized the brand name from his walk up the four-lane. America's Best Warranty. The co-worker herself was a tired and harassed woman of about 35. She opened her door and stepped out to the stoop and pulled the door shut behind her to block out the noise from what sounded like a dozen kids running riot inside. She recognized Anyani immediately, even glanced beyond her, looking for a camera crew.
"Yes," she said.
"We need to talk about Olin Archer," Helen Roden said. The woman said nothing. She looked conflicted, like she knew she was supposed to think it was tasteless to talk about victims of tragedy to journalists. But apparently Anyani's celebrity status overcame her reluctance.
"Okay," she said. "What do you want to know?"
"Olin was a lovely person, and all of us at the office miss her terribly." The nature of randomness, Reacher thought. Random slayings always involved people described as lovely afterward. Nobody ever said, "She was a rat-faced fink, and I'm glad she's dead. Whoever it was did us all a favor." That never happened.
"We need to know something about her husband," Helen said.
"Well, I never met her husband," the woman said.
"Did Olin talk about him?"
"A little, I guess. Now and then. His name is Ted, I think."
"What does he do?"
"He's in business. I'm not sure what kind of business."
"Did Olin say anything about him being missing?"
"Missing?"
"Olin reported him missing 2 months ago."
"I know she seemed terribly worried. I think he was having problems with his business. In fact, I think he'd been having problems for a year or two. That's why Olin went back to work."
"She didn't always work?"
"Oh, no, ma'am. I think she did way back, and then she gave it up. But she had to come back because of circumstances. Whatever the opposite of rags to riches is."
"Riches to rags," Reacher said.
"Yes, like that," the woman said.
"She needed her job, financially. I think she was embarrassed about it."
"But she didn't give you details?"
Anyani asked.
"She was a very private person," the woman said. "It's important. She would get kind of distracted. That wasn't like her. About a week before she was killed, she was gone most of one afternoon. That wasn't like her either." "Do you know what she was doing?"
"No, I really don't."
"Anything you remember about her husband would help us."
The woman shook her head.
"His name is Ted. That's all I can say for sure."
"Okay, thanks," Helen said.
She turned and headed back to her car. Yanni and Reacher followed her. The woman on the stoop stared after them, disappointed, like she had failed an audition. Anyani said,
"Strike one, but don't worry, it always happens that way. Sometimes I think we should just skip the first person on the list. They never know anything."
Reacher was uncomfortable in the back of the car. His pants pocket had gotten underneath him, and a coin was digging edge-on into his thigh. He squirmed around and pulled it out. It was a quarter, new and shiny. He looked at it for a minute, and then he put it in the other pocket.
"I agree," he said. "We should have skipped her. My fault. Stands to reason a co-worker wouldn't know much. People are cagey around co-workers, especially rich people fallen on hard times."
"The neighbor will know more,"
Yanni said.
"We hope,"
Helen said. They were caught in cross-town traffic. They were headed from the eastern suburbs to the western, and it was a slow, slow ride. Reacher was glancing between his watch
and the windows again. The sun was low on the horizon ahead of them. Behind them, it was already twilight. Time ticking away. Rosemary Barr moved in her chair and struggled against the tape binding her wrists.
"We know it was Charlie who did it," she said.
"Charlie," the Zek repeated.
"My brother's so-called friend."
"Chenko," the Zek said.
"His name is Chenko, and yes, he did it. Tactically, it was his plan. He did well. Of course, his physique helped. He was able to wear his own shoes inside your brother's. He had to roll the pants and the raincoat sleeves."
"But we know,"
Rosemary said. "Ah, but who knows? And what exactly do they bring to the party?"
"Helen Roden knows."
"You'll dismiss her as your lawyer. You'll terminate the representation. Miss Roden will be unable to repeat anything she learned while your relationship was privileged. Linsky, am I right?"
Linsky nodded. He was 6 feet away on the sofa, propped at an odd angle to rest his back.
"That's the law," he said, "here in America."
"Franklin knows,"
Rosemary said.
"And Agnani."
"Hearsay," the Zek said. "Theories, speculation and innuendo. Those two have no persuasive evidence, and no credibility either. Private detectives and television journalists are exactly the kind of people who peddle ridiculous and alternative explanations for events like these. It's to be expected. Its absence would be unusual. Apparently, a president was killed in this country more than 40 years ago, and people like them still claim that the real truth has not yet been uncovered."
Rosemary said nothing.
"Your deposition will be definitive," the Zek said. "You'll go to Rodin, and you'll give sworn testimony about how your brother plotted and planned, about how he told you what he was intending, in detail, the time, the place, everything. You'll say that to your sincere and everlasting regret you didn't take him seriously. Then some poor excuse for a public defender will take one look at your evidence and plead your brother guilty, and the whole thing will be over."
"I won't do it,"
Rosemary said. The Zek looked straight at her.
"You will do it," he said. "I promise you that. 24 hours from now, you'll be begging to do it. You'll be insane with fear that we might change our minds and not let you do it."
The room went quiet. Rosemary glanced at the Zek as if she had something to say. Then she glanced away. But the Zek answered her anyway. He had heard her message loud and clear.
"No, we won't be there with you at the deposition," he said. "But we will know what you tell them within minutes. And don't think about a little detour to the bus depot. For one thing, we'll have your brother killed. For another, there's no country in the world we can't find you in."
Rosemary said nothing.
"Anyway," the Zek said, "let's not argue. It's unproductive and pointless. You'll tell them what we tell you to tell them. You will, you know. You'll see. You'll be desperate to. You'll be wishing we had arranged an earlier appointment for you at the courthouse. You'll spend the waiting time on your knees, pleading for a chance to show us how word-perfect you are. That's how it usually happens. We're very good at what we do.
we learned that the feet of masters.
My brother has Parkinson's disease, Rosemary said.
Diagnosed when? The Zek asked, because he knew the answer.
It's been developing.
The Zek shook his head. Too subjective to be helpful. Who's to say it's not a similar condition brought on suddenly by his recent injury? If not, then who's to say such a condition is a true handicap anyway, when shooting from such a close range? If the public defender brings in an expert, then Rodin will bring in three. He'll find doctors who will swear that little Annie Oakley was racked with Parkinson's disease from the very day she was born.
Reacher knows, Rosemary said.
The soldier? The soldier will be dead by morning. Dead or a runaway.
He won't run away.
Therefore he'll be dead. He'll come for you tonight. We'll be ready for him.
Rosemary said nothing.
Men have come for us before, in the night, the Zek said. Many times. In many places. And yet, we're still here.
Da, Linsky?
Linsky nodded again.
We're still here, he said.
When will he come? The Zek asked.
I don't know, Rosemary said.
4 o'clock in the morning, Linsky said. He's an American. They're trained that 4 o'clock in the morning is the best time for a surprise attack.
Direction?
From the north would make the most sense. The stone-crushing plant would conceal his staging area and leave him only 200 yards of open ground to cover, but I think he'll double-bluff us there. He'll avoid the north, because he knows it's best.
Not from the west, the Zek said.
Linsky shook his head.
I agree, not down the driveway, too straight and open. He'll come from the south or the east.
Put Vladimir in with Sokolov, the Zek said to him.
Tell them to watch the south and the east very carefully, but tell them to keep an eye out north and west, too. All 4 directions must be monitored continuously, just in case. Then put Chenko in the upstairs hallway with his rifle. He can be ready to deploy to whichever window is appropriate. With Chenko, 1 shot will be enough.
Then he turned to Rosemary Barr.
Meanwhile, we'll put you somewhere safe, he told her. Your tutorials will start as soon as the soldier is buried.
The outer western suburbs were bedroom communities for people who worked in the city, so the traffic stayed bad all the way out. The houses were much grander than in the east. They were all 2-story, all varied, all well-maintained. They all had big lots and pools and ambitious evergreen landscaping. With the last of the sunset behind them, they looked like pictures in a brochure.
Tight-ass middle class, Reacher said.
What we all aspire to, Yanni said.
They won't want to talk, Reacher said. Not their style.
They'll talk, Yanni said. Everyone talks to me.
They drove past the Archer place slowly. There was a cast metal sign on thin chains under the mailbox, Ted and Oleen Archer. Beyond it, across a broad, open lawn, the house looked closed up and dark and silent. It was a big Tudor place, dull brown beams, cream stucco, 3-car garage.
Nobody home, Reacher thought.
The neighbor they were looking for lived across the street and 1 lot to the north. Hers was a place about the same size as the Archers, but done in an Italianate style. Stone accents, little crenellated towers, dark green sun awnings on the south-facing ground-floor windows. The evening light was fading away to darkness, and lamps were coming on behind draped windows. The whole street looked warm and rested and quiet and very satisfied with itself. Reacher said,
"They sleep safely in their beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do them harm."
"You know George Orwell?"
Yanni asked.
"I went to college," Reacher said. "West Point is technically a college."
Yanni said, "The existing social order is a swindle, and its cherished beliefs mostly delusions.
It is not possible for any thinking person to live in such a society as our own without wanting to change it," Reacher said.
"I'm sure these are perfectly nice people,"
Helen said.
"But will they talk to us?"
"They'll talk," Yanni said. "Everyone talks."
Helen pulled into a long limestone driveway and parked about 20 feet behind an imported SUV that had big chrome wheels. The front door of the house was made of ancient gray weathered oak with iron banding that had nail heads as big as golf balls. It felt like you could step through it straight into the Renaissance.
"Property is theft," Reacher said.
"Prudhomme," Yanni said. "Property is desirable, is a positive good in the world."
"Abraham Lincoln," Reacher said, "in his first State of the Union."
There was an iron knocker shaped like a quoit in a lion's mouth. Helen lifted it and used it to thump on the door. Then she found a discreet electric bell push and pressed that, too. They heard no answering sound inside the house. Heavy door, thick walls. Helen tried again with the bell, and before she got her finger off the button, the door sucked back off copper weatherproofing strips and opened like a vault. A guy was standing there with his hand on the inside handle.
"Yes?" he said.
He was somewhere in his 40s, solid, prosperous, probably a golf club member, maybe an elk, maybe a Rotarian. He was wearing corduroy pants and a patterned sweater. He was the kind of guy who gets home and immediately changes clothes as a matter of routine.
"Is your wife at home?" Helen asked. "We'd like to speak with her about Oline Archer."
"About Oline?" the guy said. He was looking at Ann Yanni.
"I'm a lawyer,"
Helen said.
"What is there to be said about Oline?"
"Maybe more than you think," Yanni said.
"You're not a lawyer."
"I'm here as a journalist," Yanni said, "but not on a human interest story. Nothing tacky. There might have been a miscarriage of justice. That's the issue here."
"A miscarriage in what way?"
"They might have arrested the wrong man for the shootings. That's why I'm here. That's why we're all here."
Reacher watched the guy. He was standing there, holding the door, trying to decide. In the end, he just sighed and stepped back.
"You better come in," he said.
"Everyone talks."
He led the way through a muted yellow hallway to a living room. It was spacious and immaculate. Velvet furniture, little mahogany tables, a stone fireplace. No television. There was probably a separate room for that. A den, or a home theater.
Or perhaps they didn't watch television.
Reacher saw Ann Yanni calculating the odds.
"I'll get my wife," the guy said.
He came back a minute later with a handsome woman a little younger than himself. She was wearing pressed jeans and a sweatshirt the same yellow as the hallway walls, penny loafers on her feet, no socks. She had hair that had been expensively styled to look casual and windswept. She was medium height and lean in a way that spoke of diet books and serious time in aerobics classes.
"What's this about?" she asked.
"Ted Archer," Helen said.
"Ted? I thought you told my husband it was about Oline. We think there may be a connection between his situation and hers."
How could there be a connection? Surely, what happened to Oline was completely out of the blue. Maybe it wasn't. I don't understand. We suspect that Oline might have been a specific target, kind of hidden behind the confusion of the other four victims. Wouldn't that be a matter for the police?
Helen paused.
At the moment, the police seem satisfied with what they've got.
The woman glanced at her husband.
Then I'm not sure we should talk about it, he said.
At all? Yanni asked. Or just to me?
I'm not sure if we would want to be on television.
Reacher smiled to himself, the other side of the tracks.
This is deep background only, Yanni said. It's entirely up to you whether your names are used.
The woman sat down on a sofa, and her husband sat next to her, very close. Reacher smiled to himself again. They had subconsciously adopted the standard couple-on-a-sofa pose that television interviews used all the time. Two faces, close together, ideally framed for a tight camera shot. Yanni took her cue and sat in an armchair, facing them, perched right on the edge, leaning forward, her elbows on her knees, a frank and open expression on her face. Helen took another chair. Reacher stepped away to the window, used a finger to move the drapes aside. It was fully dark outside. Time ticking away.
Tell us about Ted Archer, Yanni said. Please.
A simple request, only 6 words, but her tone said, I think you two are the most interesting people in the world, and I would love to be your friend. For a moment, Reacher thought Yanni had missed her way. She would have been a great cop.
Ted had business problems, the woman said. Is that why he disappeared? Yanni asked.
The woman shrugged.
That was Oline's initial assumption. But ultimately she rejected that explanation. And I think she was right, too. Ted wasn't that kind of a man, and his problems weren't those kind of problems. The fact is, he was getting screwed rotten, and he was mad as hell about it, and he was fighting. And people who fight don't just walk away. I mean, do they? How was he getting screwed?
The woman glanced at her husband. He leaned forward. Boy stuff. His principal customer stopped buying from him, which happens. Power in the marketplace ebbs and flows. So Ted offered to renegotiate, offered to drop his price. No dice. So he offered to drop it more. He told me he got to the point where he was giving it away. Still no dice. They just wouldn't buy.
What do you think was happening?
Yanni asked.
Keep talking, sir.
Corruption, the guy said. Under-the-table inducements. It was completely obvious. One of Ted's competitors was offering kickbacks. No way for an honest man to compete with that.
When did this start?
About 2 years ago. It was a major problem for them. Financially, they went downhill very fast. No cash flow. Ted sold his car. Oline had to go out to work. The DMV thing was all she could find. They made her supervise her after about a month. He smiled a thin smile, proud of his class. Another year she'd have been running the place. She'd have been commissioner.
What was Ted doing about it? How was he fighting?
He was trying to find out which competitor it was.
Did he find out?
We don't know. He was trying for a long time, and then he went missing.
Didn't Oline include this in her report?
The guy sat back, and his wife leaned forward again, shook her head.
Oline didn't want to. Not back then. It was all unproven, all speculation. She didn't want to throw accusations around. and it wasn't definitely connected. I guess the way we're telling it now, it sounds more obvious than it was at the time. I mean, Ted wasn't Sherlock Holmes or anything. He wasn't on the case 24/7. He was still doing normal stuff. He was just talking to people when he could, you know, asking questions, comparing notes, comparing prices, trying to put it all together. It was a 2-year period. Occasional conversations, phone calls, inquiries, things like that. It didn't seem dangerous, certainly. Did Olin ever go to anyone with this? Later, maybe? The woman nodded. She stewed for 2 months after he disappeared. We talked. She was up and down with it. Eventually, she decided there had to be a connection. I agreed with her. She didn't know what to do. I told her she should call the police. And did she? She didn't call. She went personally. She felt they would take her more seriously, face to face. Not that they did, apparently. Nothing happened. It was like dropping a stone down a well and never hearing the splash. When did she go? 1 week before the thing in the plaza last Friday. Nobody spoke. Then, kindly, gently, Anne Yanni asked the obvious question. You didn't suspect a connection? The woman shook her head. Why would we? It seemed to be a total coincidence. The shootings were random, weren't they? You said so yourself on the television news. We heard you say it. 5 random victims in the wrong place at the wrong time. Nobody spoke. Reacher turned away from the window.
What business was Ted Archer in? He asked. I'm sorry, I assumed you knew, the husband said. He owns a quarry. Huge place, about 40 miles north of here. Cement, concrete, crushed stone. Vertically integrated, very efficient. And who was the customer who backed off? The city, the guy said. Big customer. As big as they come. All this construction going on right now is manna from heaven for people in that business. The city sold $90 million in tax-free municipals just to cover the first year. Add in the inevitable overruns, and it's a 9-figure bonanza for somebody. What car did Ted sell?
A Mercedes-Benz.
Then what did he drive?
He used a truck from work.
Did you see it? Every day for 2 years. What was it?
A pickup, a
Chevy,
I think.
An old brown Silverado? Plain steel wheels? The guy stared.
How did you know that?
One more question, Reacher said. For your wife. She looked at him. After Olin went to the cops, did she tell you who it was she talked to? Was it a detective called Emerson?
The woman was already shaking her head. I told Olin if she didn't want to call, she should go to the station house. But she said it was too far because she never got that long of a lunch hour. She said she'd go to the DA instead. His office is much closer to the DMV. And Olin was like that anyway. She preferred to go straight to the top. So she took it to Alex Roden himself.
Helen Roden was completely silent on the drive back to town. So silent, she quivered and vibrated and shook with it. Her lips were clamped, and her cheeks were sucked in, and her eyes were wide open. Her silence made it impossible for Reacher or Yanni to speak. She drove like a robot, competently, not fast, not slow, displaying a mechanical compliance with lane markers and stoplights and yield signs. She parked on the apron below Franklin's office and left the motor running and said,
"You two go on ahead."
I just can't do this. Ann Yanni got out and walked over to the staircase. Reacher stayed in the car and leaned forward over the seat.
It'll be okay, he said.
It won't.
Helen, pull the keys and get your ass upstairs. You're an officer of the court, and you've got a client in trouble.
Then he opened his door and climbed out of the car, and by the time he had walked around the trunk, she was waiting for him at the foot of the stairs. Franklin was in front of his computer, as always. He told Reacher that Cash was on his way up from Kentucky. No questions asked. Told him that Ted Archer hadn't shown up anywhere else in the databases. Then he noticed the silence and the tension.
What's up? He asked.
We're one step away, Reacher said. Ted Archer was in the concrete business, and he was frozen out of all these new city construction contracts by a competitor who was offering bribes. He tried to prove it, and must have been getting very close to succeeding because the competitor offed him.
Can you prove that?
Only by inference. We'll never find his body without digging up First Street again. But I know where his truck is. It's in Jeb Oliver's barn.
Why there?
They used Oliver for things they can't do themselves, for when they don't want to show their faces, or for when they can't. Presumably, Archer knew them and wouldn't have gone near them. But Oliver was just a local kid. Maybe he staged a flat tire or hitched a ride. Archer would have walked right into it. Then the bad guys hid the body and Oliver hid the truck. Oline Archer didn't suspect anything?
She did, eventually, Reacher said. She sat on it 2 months, and then presumably she pieced together enough to make some kind of sense out of it.
Then she started to go public with it, and all kinds of private alarm bells must have gone off, because a week later she was dead. Staged the way it was, because to have a missing husband and then a murdered wife 2 months later would have raised too many flags. But as long as it looked random, it was going to be seen as coincidental.
Who had Oline taken it to? Emerson?
Reacher said nothing.
She took it to my father, Helen Roden said.
There was silence for a long moment.
So, what now? Franklin said.
You need to hit that keyboard again, Reacher said. Whoever got the city contracts has pretty much defined himself as the bad guy here. So we need to know who he is and where he's based.
Public record, Franklin said. So check it.
Franklin turned away in the silence and started his fingers pattering over the keys. He pointed and clicked for a minute, then he came up with the answer. Specialized Services of Indiana, he said. They own all the current city contracts for cement, concrete, and crushed stone, many millions of dollars.
Where are they?
That was the good news.
What's the bad?
There's no paperwork. They're a trust registered in Bermuda. They don't have to file anything.
What kind of a system is that?
Franklin didn't answer.
A Bermuda trust needs a local lawyer.
Helen's voice was low, quiet, resigned. Reacher recalled the plate outside A.A. Roden's office, the name followed by the letters that denoted the law degree. Franklin clicked his way through 2 more screens.
"Here's a phone number," he said. "That's all we've got."
"What is it?"
Helen asked. Franklin read it out.
"That's not my father's number," Helen said.
Franklin clicked his way into a reverse directory, typed in the number, and the screen changed and gave him a name and a business address. "John Mischoff," he said.
"Russian name," Reacher said.
"I guess so."
"Do you know him?"
"Vaguely. He's a wills and trusts guy. One-man band. I've never worked for him." Reacher checked his watch.
"Can Can you find a home address?
Franklin went into a regular directory, typed in the name, and came up with a domestic listing.
Should I call him? He said.
Reacher shook his head. We'll pay him a visit. Face-to-face works better when time is short. Vladimir made his way down to the ground floor surveillance room. Sokolov was in a rolling chair in front of the long table that carried the four television monitors. From left to right, they were labeled north, east, south, and west, which made sense if a person viewed the world from a clockwise perspective. Sokolov was scooting his chair slowly down the line, examining each picture, moving on, returning from west to north with a powerful push off the wall. All four screens were misty and green because it was dark outside and the thermal imaging had kicked in. Occasionally, a bright dot could be seen moving fast in the distance. An animal, nocturnal, fox, skunk, raccoon, or a pet cat, or a lost dog far from home. The north monitor showed a glow from the crushing plant. It would fade as the idle machines cooled. Apart from that, all the backgrounds were a deep olive color, because there was nothing out there except for miles of fields constantly misted with cold water from the always churning irrigation booms. Vladimir pulled up a second wheeled chair and sat down on Sokolov's left. He would watch north and east. Sokolov would concentrate on the south and west. That way, they each had responsibility for one likely direction and one unlikely. It was a fair distribution of labor. Upstairs, in the third-floor hallway, Chenko loaded his own super match. 10 rounds. Lake City, 308s. One thing Americans did right was ammunition. He opened all the bedroom doors to speed his access, north, south, east, or west, as required. He walked to a window and turned his night scope on, set it for 75 yards. He figured he would get the call when the soldier was about 150 yards out. That was about the practical limit for the cameras. He would step to the right window and acquire the target when it was still more than 100 yards distant. He would track its progress. He would let it come to him. When it was 75 yards out, he would kill it. He raised the rifle, checked the image. It was bright and clear. He watched a fox cross the open ground east to west. "Good hunting, my little friend." He walked back to the hallway and propped the gun against the wall and sat down in a straight-backed chair to wait. Helen Roden insisted on staying behind in Franklin's office, so Reacher and Yanni went out alone in the Mustang. The streets were dark and quiet. Yanni drove. She knew her way around. The address they were looking for was a loft building carved out of an old warehouse halfway between the river wharf and the railhead. Yanni said it was a part of the new urban strategy. Soho comes to the heartland. She said she had thought about buying in the same building. Then she said, "We should put Helen on suicide watch."
"She'll be okay," Reacher said.
"You think?"
"I'm pretty sure."
"What if it was your old man?"
Reacher didn't answer that.
Yanni slowed as the bulk of a large brick building loomed through the darkness.
"You can ask first," Reacher said. "If he doesn't answer, I'll ask second."
"He'll answer," Yanni said. "They all answer."
But John Mistroff didn't. He was a thin guy of about 45. He was dressed like a post-divorce midlife crisis victim. Acid-rinsed, too tight jeans, black T-shirt, no shoes. They found him all alone in a big white loft apartment eating Chinese food from paper cartons. Initially, he was very pleased to see Ann Yanni. Maybe hanging out with celebrities was a part of the lifestyle glamour that the new development had promised. But his early enthusiasm faded fast.
It disappeared completely when Yanni ran through her suspicions and then insisted on knowing the names behind the trust.
I can't tell you,
he said. Surely you understand there are confidentiality issues here. Surely you understand that.
I understand that serious crimes have been committed, Yanni said. That's what I understand. And you need to understand that, too. You need to choose up sides, right now, fast, before this thing goes public.
No comment, the guy said.
There's no downside here, Yanni said gently. These names we want, they'll all be in jail tomorrow. No comebacks.
No comment, the guy said again.
You want to go down with them?
Yanni asked, sharply.
Like an accessory? Or do you want to get out from under? It's your choice. But one way or the other, you're going to be on the news tomorrow night. Either doing the perp walk, or standing there looking good like, oh my God, I had no idea. I was only too happy to help.
No comment, the guy said for the third time, loud, clear, and smug. Yanni gave up, shrugged, and glanced at Reacher. Reacher checked his watch. Time ticking away. He stepped up close. You got medical insurance? He asked. The guy nodded. Dental plan? The guy nodded again. Reacher hit him in the mouth. Right-handed, short swing, hard blow. Get that fixed, he said. The guy rocked back a step and doubled over, and then came up coughing with blood all over his chin, cut lips, loose teeth, all rimed with red. Names, Reacher said. Now, or I'll take you apart a piece at a time. The guy hesitated. Mistake. Reacher hit him again. Then the guy came up with names, six of them, and descriptions, and an address, all from a position flat on the floor, and all in a voice thick and bubbly with mouthfuls of blood. Reacher glanced at Yanni. They all answer, he said. In the dark, in the Mustang on the way back, Ann Yanni said,
He'll call and warn them.
He won't, Reacher said. He just betrayed them. So my guess is he'll be going on a long vacation tomorrow.
You hope?
Doesn't matter anyway. They already know I'm coming for them. Another warning wouldn't make a difference.
You have a very direct style, one they don't mention in Journalism 101.
I could teach you. It's about surprise, really. If you can surprise them, you don't have to hit them very hard.
Yanni dictated to Franklin the names that John Mistroff had given up. Four of them corresponded with names Reacher had already heard. Charlie Smith, Konstantin Raskin, Vladimir Shumilov, and Pavel Sokolov. The fifth was Grigor Linsky, which Reacher figured had to be the damaged man in the boxy suit, because the sixth name had been given simply as Zek Chelovek.
I thought you said Zek was a word. Franklin said. It is, Reacher said. And so is Chelovek. It's a transliteration of their word for human being. Zek Chelovek means prisoner human being, like prisoner man. The others aren't using code names. Neither is the Zek, probably. Maybe that's all he's got left. Maybe he forgot his real name. Maybe we all went in the gulag.
You sound sorry for him. Yanni said.
I'm not sorry for him, Reacher said. I'm just trying to understand him.
No mention of my father, Helen said.
Reacher nodded. Zek is the puppet master. He's at the top of the tree.
Which means my father is just an employee.
Don't worry about that now. Focus on Rosemary.
Franklin used an online map and figured out that the address John Mistroff had spilled related to a stone-crushing plant built next to a quarry 8 miles north and west of the city. Then he searched the tax rolls and confirmed that Specialized Services of Indiana was its registered owner. Then he searched the rolls all over again and found that the only other real estate registered to the trust was a house on the lot adjacent to the stone-crushing plant.
Yanni said she knew the area. "Anything else out there?" Reacher asked her.